Srila Prabhupada ki
jai,
Shri Bhakti Vai Bhava ki
jai,
Kanantaraj Srima Bhagavatama ki
jai,
Giriraj Maharaj ki
jai,
Jai Nitai Gopremanandi
ki
jai. So what did we discuss in our last class?
Envy is the primary mood in the material of the material world.
Hold it up.
Envy is the primary mood in the material world.
Oh. Important point. Anything else? Yeah. Anything else? Any other points?
Not lost on the body with that song, realizing there is a spirit soul, and that whatever is happening, the spirit soul is not acting, it is a noble nature of it. Yeah.
Hmm.
And hence do not get hated, do not react. Follow it.
Anything else? Say it again.
By serving our previous acharyas, we can advance more quickly.
Any other points?
The soul can only desire.
Soul can do only two things. It can initiate in the form of desire and culminate in the form of an experience.
Good. Anything else?
In any given situation, we do, during our interactions with devotees or non-devotees, they may respond on a material platform with us, but we should not respond back in a material on a material platform. Our response should be always based on the spiritual platform. And that is what Vishnu is telling Sri Maharaj, that Indra is behaving right now on the material platform, but you will respond in a similar way.
Good. Anything else?
Person is very advanced in Krishna consciousness. He does not get easily agitated. He controls anger, negative thoughts.
So we see in the beginning of chapter 20 that Lord Vishnu appears after 99 yajnas of Prithvi Maharaj, and Lord Vishnu begins to preach to Prithvi Maharaj Divya Gyan, or transcendental knowledge, and to bring him onto the spiritual platform. Now, the first point that he makes to Prithvi Maharaj is that one must become Atmanam, which means one must understand the difference between matter and spirit. This is the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, and it is something none of us have realized yet. Even though it is the most basic teaching of spiritual life, it is the first thing which Krishna elaborates upon in the Bhagavad Gita. So, after discussing that point, he describes that every conditioned soul of the material world is simply under the control of the three modes of material nature. When anyone acts, it is simply because they've been pushed by the three modes of material nature. The jiva has minute desire. He desires to act in a particular way, and then the modes, they completely take over at that point in time. So everyone is basically under the control of the modes of material nature. Now tonight we'll go from verses 11 to 19. And we'll discuss further. Lord Vishnu continues to elaborate to Krishna Maharaj on these points. The purports are very long by that, so we have to move a little slowly at this point to try to understand everything that is spoken. Any other points?
Okay.
Anyone who knows that this material body made of the five gross elements, the sense organs, the working senses and the mind is simply supervised. Is simply supervised by fixed soul is eligible to be liberated from material bondage. Shake up with me, can you read the first part?
This verse describes how one can become liberated from material bondage. The first point is that one must know that the soul is different from this body. The soul is called Dehi, or one who possesses the body, and the material body is called Deha, or the embodiment of the soul. The body is changing at every moment, but the soul is fixed. Therefore, the soul is called Kutastham. The change of the body is enacted by the reactions of the three modes of nature. One who has understood the fixed position of the soul should not be disturbed by the incoming and outgoing interactions of the modes of material nature in the form of happiness and distress. In Bhagavad Gita also, Lord Krishna recommends that since happiness and distress come and go due to the interaction of the modes of material nature on the body, one should not be disturbed by such external movements. Even though one is sometimes absorbed in such external movements, he has to learn to tolerate them. The living entity should be always indifferent to the action and reaction of the external body.
So what are the points in this first paragraph?
It's like someone has disturbed happiness and distress come along with the external. So he says yes, but the something. So he points to over and the equal voice towards the action.
Good. Any other points?
I was reading the email of Shankar Sandas Adhikari Maharaj and was answering a question. He said the desires are originated from soul, not from mind or brain, you know, its capacity. And they are pure. But when it comes out and they are covered by modes of ignorance, they get covered a reflection of the original pure desires. The whole aim of Krishna conscious activity is to remove that covering and revive that actual soul, that we can get the pure desire.
Good. Anything else? So Prabhupada asked the question in this first paragraph. He says, how do we become liberated from matter? In the second paragraph he elaborates on that point. But how do we become liberated from matter? Yeah, ultimately. Yeah, Prabhupada elaborates on that in a second. First of all, we need jnana. First of all, we need knowledge. That's why Krishna begins the Bhagavad Gita with a description of jnana, or knowledge. You must understand the difference between the body and the soul. As Krishna elaborates in the Bhagavad Gita, this will liberate one from material consciousness. If you can understand the difference between the body and the soul, matter and spirit. Now, we should become indifferent to the interactions of the modes of material nature. As Usha Mataji was quoting from Krishna in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Matraspa Shastukunteya, Shitosna Sukha Dukha Dahana. these things come and go, just like the changing of these seasons. Summer is ending. We don't necessarily want summer to end. We don't necessarily enjoy winter. But it will come anyway, of its own accord. You cannot stop it. So, in the material world, happiness and distress must come. You cannot have only happiness in the material world. Because it is the material world. Sukha dukkha daha means there will be happiness, there will be distress. Both will come. So, Krishna teaches in the Bhagavad Gita, and Lord Vishnu is stating here to Prithvi Maharaj, Prabhupada is elaborating, one must become indifferent to what goes on externally on the bodily platform. Because we understand if we are feeling some happiness, some distress, that is the modes of material nature interacting with the body according to our previous karma. What you've done previously, then that will come in this lifetime or in the next lifetime. So we have done good, we have done bad, we have performed punya and pap. So then we get reactions, pious reactions and sinful reactions, which means we'll experience happiness and distress. These things both will come in the material world. You cannot avoid. You cannot avoid happiness. A certain amount will come. You cannot avoid distress. A certain amount will come. But as Prabhupada is explaining here, we must become indifferent to the reactions of the modes of nature with the material body and the mind. Because these things are coming over the soul, they're washing over the soul. It is not actually the soul or the Atma who is experiencing happiness or distress in this material world. We are simply witnessing. Now, this has already been explained earlier in the second canto. The soul is a witness. He sees these things taking place, but he does not actually experience happiness or distress on the material platform. This is all the reaction of the modes of nature with the body. So self-realization means that we become a witness. We do not actually experience these things. We do not become attached to these things, to the happiness and distress in this world. Any points so far?
In Gita, we have that knowledge that one soul, one body is eating the results of the activity, the other one is observing. So, are we referring here to Paramatma? Because Paramatma is observing, and the soul is actually experiencing.
No. It means that the jiva also. When one is self realized, he also observes. Like Srila Prabhupada, he was in the body, but he was not reacting to the modes of nature reacting with the body. That's the difference. Any other points?
Can we react suitably in the changes that are occurring with the body? Can we react suitably? Are we keep quiet with the soul? That's not eternal. The soul is eternal only.
Yeah, so Prabhupada says that we should not react. We should be indifferent. These things will happen externally, but we should not relate to them, or we should not identify with them. It is simply a material experience. That's all.
Like a tolerate.
Yeah.
So the capacity to absorb or tolerate, it comes, it's a manifestation of which quality? What is the, why one absorbs and why other does not?
Because it is, ultimately it's coming from the soul, it's one of the qualities of the soul. As Prabhupada mentions in one of these purports, then he mentions the 26 qualities of a devotee, which is mentioned by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which is Sanatana Goswami. So it is one of the qualities of the soul, to be like that. In the material world, it is the quality of the mode of goodness, to be tolerant. Is there people more in the mode of goodness? They're more tolerant. Because like you see people from India, they're more tolerant. Yeah, because you have to tolerate. Just like, you know, whenever I go to India, you see like a little, say you see a Tata sumo with 16 people in it. Right? And everyone's going down the road and everyone's just happy. Right? No one's got any anxiety on their face or anything, and just everyone's there and just sitting. That's India. Right? In Australia, you could put 6 people in, right? Maybe 8, and after that, then everyone becomes very disturbed in the mind. But the people in India, they're more in the mode of goodness by janma, by birth. Therefore, they have more tolerance naturally. Okay. Like a leela from his side. Yeah, he reacted in the correct way. Prithvimaraj did not act incorrectly. He was not under the influence of the modes of nature, whereas Indra was. The same reason why Krishna teaches Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna, because we need to hear it like that. It's not so much for Prithvimaraj like that, but it is Lord Vishnu instructing. Any other points? Okay, we'll read the second paragraph, then Hemagori, you'd like to read the second?
Lord Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that the body made up of the four simple elements, earth, water, fire, air and sky. And the southern element, mind, intelligence and ego, is completely different from the soul proper. One should therefore not be disturbed by the action and reaction of these eight gross and subtle material elements. The practical process to attain this stage of indifference is to execute devotional service. One only who constantly engages in devotional service 24 hours a day can be indifferent to the action and reaction of the eternal external body. When a man is absorbed in a particular thought, he does not hear or see any external activity, even though they are enacted in his presence. Similarly, those who are fully absorbed in devotional service do not care what is going on with the external body. Thus, that status is called samadhi. One who is actually situated in samadhi is understood to be a first class yogi.
What are the points here?
Krishna says, Kita Svetha, a top stable minded. And he asked Arjuna how does he keep how does he talk, and so he gives him all this like liquid voice, and he doesn't react to the senses like a proper sister, he withdraws all his senses and things are in the case of what he says.
Yeah. It's good. Anything else?
Just by diverting the attention from Maya to Krishna, we can attain this state.
Even on the material platform, like if one is focused, one is absorbed in a particular thought, that takes the person away from other pain or happiness. It's not that we should be in on the spiritual platform. We can see in the pastime of not pastime, the story of Akbar. I think all of you know the story. Akbar was once offering his prayers in a mosque, and he said no one should enter that place. But a lady enters the place in search of her. She was trying to search somebody, and she hardly is seeing what the person is doing. Whereas Akbar gets disturbed, and he says that, how dare you disturb me when I'm offering prayer, so therefore let this person be hanged to death. And then finally, anyway, he said, okay, tell me what is the reason, why were you in the mosque and disturbing me? He said, Huzur, I hardly had a look at you, what you were doing. I was so much absorbed in search of my lover, so therefore I did not know what was happening here. And you can excuse me for that. But the fact that you are not focused is indicated that you are able to absorb me, or you were able to observe me, what I was doing, whereas I was not able to observe what you were doing. Taking that as a point, he says, well, you are condoned, and then don't do it next time. Which I find personally also, that I'm absorbed in a particular activity, even though it's a material activity, it relegates the rest of the emotions practically to naught.
Good example. So Prabhupada explains here that the gross and subtle body are completely different from the soul. Whatever goes on with the gross body or the material mind is separate from the soul. So therefore, one should not identify with what is going on. That is self-realization. We see in Prabhupada's pastimes, especially the final pastimes, when Prabhupada was about to leave this world and he was physically, his body was deteriorating. And so much so that the Kaviraj said to him, when he came, he said to the devotees that with the amount of pain that he would be going through, with his kidneys failing at this point in time, in the final days, he said it would not be possible for anyone to stay in that body. Because the pain would be so uncomfortable, the body would be so uncomfortable, the pain would be so excruciating. It wouldn't be possible for the soul to inhabit. But Prabhupada was equipoised. He wasn't showing any symptoms of being in discomfort. And that was because his consciousness was somewhere else. And that's the point he was making. That we have to become detached from our gross body and our subtle body. Become detached from the mind. Everything which the mind focuses upon, all those silly thoughts we have all through the day, we have to become detached from them. Or this person doesn't like me. And then we think about that all day long. Even while we're chanting our japa, most of the time we're thinking, this rum doesn't like me, they said this to me yesterday, I heard they said that about me, and they go on and on. And your mind, it's all the mind. So a self-realized soul becomes detached from the mind, becomes detached from the body. And in that consciousness, then one can concentrate on Krishna. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya says, become more humble than a blade of grass, become more tolerant than a tree, become devoid of false prestige, offer all respect to others, and do not expect respect for oneself. In that state of mind, you can constantly absorb yourself in Krishna through chanting the holy name. That is self-realization of that. So this is the platform which Prabhupada is encouraging us to come to. Now Prabhupada says also that when one is engaged in samadhi, samadhi, di means meditation or fixed point. Sama means equipoise, unwavering, perfect focus like that. That is samadhi. This is a state of self-realization. Krishna consciousness. One becomes fully absorbed in Krishna. His mind does not waver anymore. This is only attained through bhakti yoga. Through devotional service, one can fix the mind continuously on Krishna. Because one is tasting rasa. One is continuously tasting newer and newer pleasure in devotional service. And through that pleasure, which one experiences in devotional service, then one does not become distracted to other things. One becomes completely absorbed in Krishna. So that is the stage of samadhi. So ultimately Krishna consciousness must come to samadhi. We're so absorbed in Krishna through the taste we are experiencing in meditating upon Krishna through his holy names that we do not have, our mind does not wander to any other point. At the moment our mind is continuously wandering. Arjuna says to Krishna in Bhagavad Gita that the mind is like chanchal. Chanchala, it means it is continuously flickering, always moving. Especially when you start to chant your japa. Then your mind really begins to take off. It really begins to flicker and go every place except the holy name, like that. So, Krishna consciousness means the mind will become fixed on absorption in Krishna. And how do we become absorbed in Krishna? When we begin to get a taste and experience some rasa from meditating upon Krishna. So we have to absorb ourselves. It means we have to become advanced in Krishna consciousness. If you remain on the neophyte platform, it's very difficult for you to control your mind. Any points so far?
why constitution is in the mode of goodness, because it's born out of mode of goodness. But intelligence, since constitution is in mode of passion, since it's born out of mode of passion, so therefore when the intelligence identifies itself with the body, so therefore in the process intelligence pulls down the mind from its platform to the lowermost, and at the end we find that the mind is laboring. So therefore we need to strengthen the intelligence through knowledge and devotional activity, which maintains the mind on a higher point, or in a original state, so therefore mind becomes concentrated.
Original focus is mind, intelligence and sense of thoughts. This is all like disturbed or just in the three modes of nature. And out of all these three, first we should actually focus on the sense, controlling the senses. Then it becomes easier to control mind and intelligence.
Hmm. Yeah, in the beginning. Anything else?
When one's absorbed in Krishna, isn't it beyond the lines and you land at the transcendental, so the mind doesn't come into it when you're absorbed in Krishna?
Yeah, the material mind, the soul also has mind.
Oh, sure, yeah, but that one's fine. That's not going to make it quicker.
The soul has a form, and the subtle body is a part of the soul on the pure platform. When you come to the material world, then your subtle body takes on the form of your gross body, like that, same shape. So then when one leaves the body in an untimely fashion, then we'll see a ghost, which is the subtle body, so that looks the same as the gross body. And sometimes people see the ghost looks the same as, I think so. Is that what you're asking?
This is so equally corroborated.
Is it okay to see?
Good.
Is it okay?
Yeah.
Okay? So this is equally corroborated in a complementary medical science called Reiki, where they see the subtle body in the form of the gross body. They say that it's like moves around the contour or the profile of the gross body. So therefore with their palm, they touch not the body, but the subtle body, moving the palm around the body. And those who are experts in that area, they can feel the disease in the subtle body, and therefore they can predict, well, right now in your gross body there is no disease, but over a period of time, that disease is going to develop, because right now it is present in the subtle body. So they give the treatment to the subtle body, which kills the gross body.
Nirmala does work?
I used to do once upon a time, but these days I've stopped.
Okay. Yeah, Bhavana Swami does work. That's it. Okay. Okay. Lord Vishnu told King Prithu, "My dear king, the constant change of this material world is due to the interaction of the three modes of material nature. The five elements, the senses, the demigods who control the senses, as well as the mind, which is agitated by the spirit soul, all these taken together comprise the body. Since the spirit soul is completely different from the combination of gross and subtle material elements, my devotee, who is connected with me in intense friendship and affection, being completely in knowledge, is never agitated by material happiness and distress." Can you read the second paragraph?
Bond in friendship is particularly used here. Karmis, jnanis and yogis cannot be bound in devotional service. Karmis could be engaged in the activities of the body. The aim of life is to give comfort to the body only. Jnanis try to get out of entanglement by philosophical speculation, but they have no standing in the regulated position.
because they do not take shelter under the lotus feet of the Lord, they fall down from the exalted position of Brahman realization. Yogis also have a bodily concept of life. They think that they can achieve something spiritual by exercising the body through dharana, asana, pranayama, etc. A devotee's position is always transcendental because of his intimate and supreme personality of Godhead. Therefore, to remain always aloof from the actions and reactions of the body and engage in one's real occupation, namely rendering service to the Lord, can be possible only for the devotee.
Any points here?
So a devotee is not covered by karma, jnana, or so.
He's totally devoted to Krishna, so he doesn't affect it. Only the devotee is liberated. This is Prabhupada's point in this section, in this paragraph. That the jnani, the kami, the yogi, they are not factually liberated. But the devotee is liberated. He is jivan mukta. As Rupa Goswami says, because his mind, his body, and his speech are only used in the service of Krishna. Therefore he becomes jivan mukta, which means he is liberated from the bodily concept of life. The kami will not become liberated. The jnani thinks he is liberated, but he will return back to the conditioned state once again. And the yogi, he will focus on attaining siddhis and so forth. He will not attain full liberation. But a devotee is liberated from the material world by the potency of bhakti. So therefore, only a devotee can become a liberated soul. The other types of transcendentalists, they cannot become fully liberated. Srila Prabhupada explains it is just a mental concept for the jnanis. They think they are liberated, but it is only on the platform of the buddhi or the intelligence. And they think we have attained something very high, but factually it is not full liberation. And they will come back again to the material platform. As we see, they do again and again. As Prabhupada explains, they come and they open hospitals and they do philanthropic work because they cannot remain on the so-called platform of liberation, so then they come back to performing some mundane type of activity. Any points here?
The liberated devotees, the first class, second class, or third class, are all free.
Prabhupada explains it's like a mango. And one is fully ripe and the other one is becoming ripe. So in one sense all devotees are liberated, but in another sense it will take time to become actually liberated.
It is difficult for me to conceive of Brahman realization. In the material world you are gross body, in the spiritual world you are spiritual body. And the subtle body, mind, intelligence and reality, all zero, does not exist in the realm of reality because there is such a language of consciousness. So, what is the form of the soul? When we say that the soul is merged in human reality, in what form does it exist?
In Sayuja, in personal liberation. And then he becomes a, like it is said that he is 1/10,000th the size of the tip of a hair. So it is said that in the pastime of Chitraketu, in the sixth canto, it says that when that soul came back in, it said he illuminated everything, like 1,000 suns, like that. So it means it's just like a spiritual spark. And that spark enters into the Brahma Jyoti, which is, sometimes it's described the Brahma Jyoti is made up of unlimited sparks, unlimited jivas. Who have gone there for some time, or then in going to that impersonal bhakti liberation. Because the Brahma Jyoti is already effulgent in his life, and then that spark of light enters into the totality of light consciousness. Any other points? It dissolves. In when they go to the Brahma Jyoti, it dissolves. Disappears. Because that's a material element. So when you become liberated from the material element, then it dissolves.
But then how does it feel happiness? If the mind is still happiness.
He feels some atmarama, which means he's feeling some satisfaction on the spiritual platform. Basically, it's just peace, that's all. It is not anundo, because it is not the feeling of serving Krishna. It is Prabhupada explains as realization of the eternal feature of Krishna, which is sat. So that realization gives him some peace that he is eternal. And
I thought the mind, the subtle body, the mind intelligence, and the ego, they are each alive. Then you go to this each alive.
Yeah, but at that point in time, you give up your consciousness like that. So the symptom of the soul is consciousness, but when you go to the impersonal Brahma Jyoti, then you give up your personality. You just identify with being an eternal spiritual spark, like that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's not so pleasant. You don't have to worry about it too much. We won't have to experience that. So. Any other points?
Bhamaswami Maharaj says that Brahma Jyoti, the spirit soul, has some amount of happiness because you have this content, but it's in a very minute quantity there.
It's a little bit. Okay. My dear heroic king, please keep yourself always equipoised and treat people equally, whether they are greater than you in the intermediate stage or lower than you. Do not be disturbed by temporary distress or happiness. Fully control your mind and senses. In this transcendental position, try to execute your duty as king in whatever condition of life you may be posted by my arrangement. For your only duty here is to give protection to the citizens of your kingdom. Usha Mataji, can you?
Here is an example of receiving direct instruction from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu. One has to execute the order of Lord Vishnu, whether receiving directly from him or from his bona fide representative, the spiritual master. Arjuna fought the battle of Kurukshetra under the direct order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Similarly, here Prithu Maharaj is also being given orders by Lord Vishnu regarding the execution of his duty. We have to stick to the principles stated in the Bhagavad Gita. Every man's duty is to receive orders from the Lord Krishna or from his bona fide representative and take these orders as his life and soul, without personal considerations. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says that one should not care much whether he is going to be liberated or not, but he should simply execute the direct order received from the spiritual master. If one sticks to the principle of abiding by the order of the spiritual master, he will always remain in a liberated position. A common man must execute the rules and regulations of Varnashrama Dharma by working in his prescribed duty according to the caste system, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya and Shudra, and the spiritual order system, Brahmacharya, Grihastha, Vanaprastha and Sannyasa. If one simply executes regularly and strictly the injunctions given for the different divisions of life, then one satisfies Lord Vishnu.
Any points here?
How does Prithu Maharaj avoid good karma from acting according to the basic injunctions and doing his job well, looking after the health and well-being of his citizens?
You get good karma. That comes as well. For a devotee, that comes also. But because he dedicates everything to Krishna, then he also gets the... Well, primarily he receives the direct reciprocation from Krishna, which is what the devotee is actually absorbed in or interested in. But automatically you get all those things that will come as well. It says the Dharma, Karma, Artha, Moksha, then they are doorkeepers at the house of Bhakti. So automatically you get all that. Devotee automatically gets those things. Devotee has the merits of Dharma. He receives Artha. He receives Karma. So sense gratification is there, wealth is there, and Moksha is there. All those things come.
So that means this, but then that doesn't count towards coming back to dispense that.
No, because Krishna says moksha yasyami masujaha. I liberate you from all of it. You get the benefit, but you're not attached to it, so you don't take birth again.
Oh.
For a devotee. Any other points?
Through this parable, you simply follow the instruction of the spiritual master and the liberation of you. So, one is like following the instruction of the spiritual master, or does it depend on your consciousness? Like, what consciousness you are following the instruction? One is like, whatever spiritual master has said, you have done. And like, according to the Bhagavad, if you have done, so you will get everything, whatever, liberation. Or does it depend on the consciousness, like what consciousness you are?
What do you think? No, it's the consciousness. It's like, what is the order of the guru? What is the main order? Preach it. What's the main order? Chant. What's the main order? Every day I will chant 16 rounds. That's the order. When you take initiation, what is the vow? Right? Four are nisheda, one is viti. One is the positive, four is the negative. So what is the most important? It is chanting. Okay, so then that is the order of the guru. But the order is chant attentively. Are you doing that? So are you fulfilling the order of the guru? You chant your rounds every day, 16 rounds. Are the rounds good quality? So are you fulfilling the order of the guru? And actually, what is the order of the guru? The order of the guru is that you have to chant with love. Lord Chaitanya says that when he chants the holy name of Krishna, tears flow from the eyes like torrents of rain. So have we chanted like that as yet? So are we fulfilling the order of the guru? Because that is the order of the guru, to chant like that. So obviously it's the consciousness in which we do the activity. It's not just the activity. It's not easy to chant 16 rounds every day. But if you do chant 16 rounds every day, that is good. But that is not the final thing. Like that. Does that answer your question?
Can be.
Okay. Can be different levels, like sakama, nishkama, like that, the yoga ladder. So that can all be within Daivi Varnashrama, but it may not be unalloyed pure devotional service, but it can be like that. That's the perfection of.
So, are we saying that it's pure devotional service?
It means that you can either be avadut or you can be babaji, which means you have no obligation. Just like Vamshidas Babaji. So nothing was there. No obligation to anything. So you can be like that, or you can be like Yudhishthira Maharaj, who does everything perfectly, or Prithu Maharaj, who does everything perfectly. So either way, both are pure devotional service. So you can follow Daivi Varnashram perfectly, to show an example, or like that. Or you can totally become free from rules and regulations. Both are pure devotional service. Any other point?
Coming back to about our chanting the rounds with love and devotion, I think one thing which has to be considered is
is the devotee or is the order, is the disciple following the instruction with best of his abilities. So you can't is one thing, but you don't want that another thing. So there is a sukriti aspect or whatever we quantify, there is a limit that beyond which a person cannot go through. But there are other persons who can go through. So the question at the end of the day is, can we give the best of your ability?
Yeah, so if you're doing the best of your ability, then you will advance to that point. You'll get to that point. You do close the time.
So, in that process, are you following the process of spiritual master? Are you following the instruction of spiritual master?
Yeah, if you're chanting attentively, that's the order. If you chant attentively, that will lead to the higher sentiments in chanting.
Oh, attentively is like a subjective one, isn't it? It's not like it is all or all. So,
you know when you chant attentive rounds. You know when they were attentive and when they were not attentive. So we have to learn to chant more and more attentively, instead of chanting less and less attentively. The mind has to become more absorbed in the holy name, more fixed on the sound of the holy name. That's attentive chanting. Okay, so you have to develop that consciousness.
Chanting with your heart rather than your mind gives a different result.
Yeah. Any other points?
To the Daiti Varnashram, the point of sacrifice, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Naham Yukto, Naham Shuddha, he says, Nidharanaya Brahmana Kshatriya Vaishya Shukra, Brahma Charitra, Tam Dutta Sarvam Dutta Sarvam Dutta Sarvam Dutta Sarvam Dutta Sarvam Dutta Sarvam Dutta Sarvam. Even Srila Prabhupada had asked, when somebody asked him, he said that there is first class and second class and first class and third class, and somebody asked Srila Prabhupada, what are you doing? He said, I'm the sixth class, and I'm the servant of all these four classes. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually said that we don't have to have all these designations. Our designation should be only in our class, that's our designation.
Yeah. But because we're in the material world, and we have to follow some dharma. Mahaprabhu said that, but then as a sannyasi, he was perfect. He would not let any woman come close to him. But he was very particular in his sannyas dharma. Because we have a material body, so he was teaching us like that. But he was not attached like that. Okay. So, Prabhupada mentions in this first paragraph, he said that a devotee does not care for liberation. This is not the concern of a devotee. A devotee is automatically liberated. Now, how does the devotee become automatically liberated, according to what Prabhupada states in this first paragraph? Yeah. Prabhupada says, a devotee is simply fixed on executing the order of the spiritual master. That is liberation for the devotee. And Prabhupada, he said himself that he read the commentary of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur on Srimad Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2, verse 41, Vyavasam Satmika Buddhi, Ekeha Kuru Nandita, Bahushaka Yanantascha. What's the last one? Buddhiyo Yavasayana. So, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that Vyavasa Yatmika Buddhi, which means fixed intelligence, Ekeha Kuru Nandana. Eka means one point in intelligence. He said that this means being fixed on the order of the spiritual master. Right? And this is liberation. And you see that Srila Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had 60,000 disciples. But out of all of the disciples, which disciple was the most fixed on the order of the Guru? Because even Sridhar Swami, who was Prabhupada's very intimate godbrother, and he was a liberated soul, He was a very intimate disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Prabhupada said, he is my Shiksha Guru. Sridhar Swami, very advanced Vaishnava. But he said, when he was speaking about Prabhupada, he said that we would read the Chaitanya Bhagavat. And in Chaitanya Bhagavat it said that the name of Lord Gauranga would spread to every town and village. But he said, we thought it was just saying like that. But Prabhupada didn't think it was just saying like that. Prabhupada understood that this was the desire of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This was the desire of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Some of Prabhupada's disciples asked some of Prabhupada's godbrothers, did Prabhupada, was he the only one who received the order to go and preach in the West? Because Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gave him that order. Preach in the West in the English language. And some of Prabhupada's godbrothers said no. He said he was giving that order to many. He was often saying this. Preach in the West. And some of them went, Bon Maharaj and a few went to London and did not achieve a great deal of success. But Srila Prabhupada, he became fixed on the order of the Guru. Without deviation. Eke hakuru nandana. Completely fixed. That is liberation. That is the perfect platform. And that is what is special about the ISKCON Society, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Because there is no other acharya who has such faith in the order of his guru. And by following that mood, this is how we become liberated from the material world. Prabhupada says, he writes, don't try to see Krishna in the bushes of Vrindavan. You don't have to go to Vrindavan and walk around behind all the bushes looking for Krishna. Prabhupada said, you will find Krishna in the order of your spiritual master. You will find Krishna. Krishna will come to you. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, don't you try to see Krishna, but you act in such a way that Krishna will want to see you. That is liberation. That is how to attain Krishna. It is not something artificial, it is not something which you can attain otherwise. The only way to become liberated as a devotee is to perfectly follow the order of the spiritual master. And Prabhupada followed this order perfectly. Now when he went back to India in 1970, he said to Tamal Krishna Maharaj, who was his secretary, he said, some of my God brothers will criticize me for certain things that I have done. Because Prabhupada, he adapted some things. When he went to the West, he made some adaptations. Just like Prabhupada created the Brahmacharini Ashram. There's no such thing before Prabhupada as Brahmacharini Ashram. This comes from Prabhupada. Because he had to adapt things to preach Lord Chaitanya's message in the world. So he had to make some adaptation. But when he went back to India in 1970 with Tamal Krishna Maharaj, then he said, some of my God brothers may criticize me. So he said, if they criticize, then you say to them, how many devotees have you made? How many books have you distributed? And how many temples have you opened? Right? And then we will see who is the actual disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And Prabhupada said, actually I should not speak like this. But he said, but it is a fact. So this is how we understand, this is how we attain liberation. It is found in following the order of the spiritual master. And that is our very special and particular mood in this time, that we are 100% loyal to the order of our spiritual master. Srila Prabhupada says that the order of the Guru is the life and soul of the disciple. He said it is the pride of the disciple. Whatever order you have received from your Guru, that is the pride of the disciple. That is what the disciple keeps as the most valuable thing. Like that. This is how we become liberated in Krishna consciousness. Any points?
Talks about that pride thing, as a devotee, much of that can drop apart and be proud of what you're doing. Talking about pride, not your own pride.
So that was the prayer I wanted to turn the phone into.
Yes, okay. When your spiritual master gives you permission. Because you can't in just like in Vrindavan, you know, the Brij Basis say, no permission, no admission. That's the understanding in Vrindavan, right? If no one gives you permission, then how do you get admission? You can't just go there. Prabhupada said you can't buy a ticket to get to Vrindavan. You can't just get on the plane. You know, we can go down to Tullamarine Airport, get on the plane, get on Singapore Airlines, and just fly over, stop over in Singapore, get to Delhi. We can be there in 24 hours in Vrindavan, but are you actually in Vrindavan? Like that. So Prabhupada said you can't buy a ticket to enter Vrindavan. So you have to get permission from the guru, from the spiritual master. If the spiritual master is not physically present, then you go to the Shiksha Guru. And he will give you like that. When Krishna indicates to the guru through like that. So, any other point?
So, Indradumna Maharaj in one of his transcendental diaries, he says that the body is failing, now is the time for me to go and stay in Vrindavan.
Out of five parts of devotion service, one is to live in Mathura. So that means if the aura of the spiritual master is the, we can follow the aura anywhere. If he doesn't tell us to go and live in Mathura, we don't have to go there. So is it against the teaching of Lord Chaitanya?
No, because Bhakti Tirtha Swami, when he left this world, then he decided to leave in Gita Nagari, because he was trying to show this point. That if one is absorbed in Krishna, no matter where he is, then that is Vrindavan. Because that is Vrindavan. Vrindavan's our home. Just like when Prabhupada was sick in 1977 in January, he said, take me to Vrindavan. It's our home. So naturally a devotee feels like going there. But on the other side, then we can say that even if we don't die in Vrindavan, if our mind's in Vrindavan, we'll go to Vrindavan. Just like if you die in Vrindavan but your mind's not in Vrindavan, you may not.
Okay, so. The other thing, you use the word Abhuta. What's the meaning of that?
Avadut?
Yes.
Avadut means someone who has no rules and regulations. Just like Lord Nityananda is called Avadut.
Yeah.
It means no rules, no regulations. If you read Chaitanya Bhagavat, you read the pastimes of Lord Nityananda?
Yeah. That's what I'm asking.
Yeah, no rules, no regulations. This is called Avadut. Like that. It's type of devotee.
Okay. Can I make a point, Guru? The exalted position of a guru was displayed by Kuresha. He was an intimate disciple of Srimad Ramanujacharya. Once Ramanujacharya asked Kuresha to carry the deities, he gave his deities in a box and said, please carry it. So therefore, Kuresha, he was carrying the deities his guru, and then after a while his guru asks him, where is my shoe? So what Kuresha does is he keeps the shoes of Srimad Ramanujacharya on the deity's box and he was carrying. And he says, what is that you have done? It's such an aparad. He says, my guru is no less than my guru's deity. So therefore, I'm carrying my guru's shoes on the deity's box. Nothing wrong with me. And Srimad
Yeah, I would not do that. because I understand if I did that, I know what my guru would do, what he would do to me. Okay, so that's like that. But I'm just saying in my sampradaya, and with my guru, then.
Kuresha was such an intimate disciple of Sri Padmanabhacharya that he used to have regular conversations with Lord Ranganath. So that was his sort of position.
Yeah. Yeah, I won't comment on them. I'm just saying for us. I'm just saying, don't you do it, that's all. Yeah. Don't do it. It's there, that's there, that's okay. He did it, but don't you do it. I'm going to keep moving because we have long purports here and we have some more material to cover. So in the second paragraph, Prabhupada points out, one should never be envious of the guru and think that he is an ordinary personality. Because the entire process of becoming liberated from the material energy for a devotee is to become attached to the order of the spiritual master. Now sometimes devotees, through familiar association, they think the guru is an ordinary person. And when you begin to think the guru is an ordinary person, then you commit some offence in the mind. Just like you read Harisori Prabhu's diary, he was Prabhupada's servant for 18 months. From late 1975 to the beginning of 1977, I think, like that. So, at the end, he became a little bit disrespectful in the mind to Prabhupada, because he was with Prabhupada all day. Every day for 18 months. So then he began to see Prabhupada a little bit in some mundane way. And Prabhupada could understand this. So then Harisori Prabhu came to Prabhupada and he said, Prabhupada, I think I need a new service. And Prabhupada said, yes, you should go. Because Prabhupada understood that the mentality was becoming a little familiar. Seeing Prabhupada in a little bit material way, a little bit disrespectful was there. So we have to be very careful that this does not enter. In the disciple's consciousness when he deals with the guru, because it can't enter. And then it will obstruct your advancement in Krishna consciousness. So you have to be very careful when you deal with the senior devotees, be very careful how you deal with them. Because you may begin to see them in a material way, in an ordinary way. But the devotees are not ordinary. No devotee is ordinary. What to speak of the advanced devotees. So you have to be careful like that. Okay, we'll go to the next. To give protection to the general mass of people who are citizens of the state is the prescribed occupational duty for a king. By acting in that way, the king in his next life shares 1/6 of the result of the pious activities of the citizens. But a king or executive head of state who simply collects taxes from the citizens but does not give them proper protection as human beings, as a result of his own pious activities taken away by the citizens. And in exchange for his not giving protection, he becomes liable to punishment for the impious activities of his subjects. So Lord Vishnu is instructing Prithu Maharaj, do your duty, but be detached. This is Krishna's teaching in the Bhagavad Gita. You have a right to do your duty, but you are not entitled to the fruits of your labour. This is karma yoga in Krishna consciousness. That one must perform his duty very diligently. Whatever service you're given and whatever responsibility you have in your service and in your vana and in your ashram, you must take very seriously. You have a great responsibility. But you must be detached in your work. We do our work in this world, but we are detached. This is the instruction of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to the six Goswamis. Rupa and Sanatan wrote to him. They said, we want to renounce everything. Rupa Goswami was the treasurer. Sanatan Goswami was the prime minister of the government of Nawab, Hussein Shah. So very powerful positions, which they wanted to renounce. But Lord Chaitanya, he said, do not renounce. He said, do your duty, but internally always think of Krishna. So this is the perfect position for a devotee, because practically speaking, most of us cannot renounce. Imagine if you just walked out now. and just went to Vrindavan. I'll just give everything up. Yeah. It may not be practical. For most of us, it would not be practical. If you just left now and just walked out and just went to Vrindavan, got on a plane and just went to Vrindavan, right? Your wife would be there in 2 days after you, right? With the kids, right? And your parents would be ringing you up, and it'd be very difficult for them. But the point, and secondly, most of us couldn't do it anyway, right? Sometimes we think, oh, I'm fed up with this material world, I'm just going to go to Vrindavan. By the time you get there, you'll probably come back the next day anyway. You think, oh, I miss my wife, you know, I don't have any paratas. No? But then you'll fly all the way back, because you're attached. So until you become actually renounced, so therefore, Lord Chaitanya said, do your duty, but be detached. He said to Raghunath Das Goswami, he said, stay where you are, but do not have any attachment to this world. No? Raghunath Das Goswami had a beautiful wife, he had unlimited wealth, but he had no attachment to any of it. He was only desiring to go and be with Lord Chaitanya. But Lord Chaitanya said, just be patient. He said, Krishna will deliver you in due course of time. But in the meantime, do all of your duties perfectly, but in your heart, remain only attached to Krishna. So that is the philosophy. That is what Prithu Maharaj is being instructed by Lord Vishnu. Just do your duty, be a king, do everything perfectly, but in your heart, you just be attached to me. That is the position of a Vaishnava, of a devotee. Long purports here. It's a lot in there. Normally we give Bhagavatam class in the morning, we speak on one purport. Because Prabhupada did that because there's so much in the purport. It's very difficult to cover everything. So Prabhupada mentions in the second and third paragraph that in this material world, if one takes the position of leadership, it is his responsibility to make sure all of those who are following him become Krishna conscious. So therefore the Bhagavatam says, and Prabhupada quotes, do not become a father, do not become a mother, do not become a husband, do not become a teacher, do not become a demigod, do not become a brahmana, a guru, unless you can deliver your dependence from birth and death. That is your responsibility. If you cannot do it, then do not become. Bhagavatam says, do not become. Why are you a father? Why are you a husband? Why are you a mother? If you cannot deliver the dependent from birth and death, then you're not fulfilling your responsibility. So it says, Prabhupada emphasizes in the purport, that you must do your duty. That is the position of the leader. That is the responsibility. Now, Prabhupada says in the third paragraph that the position of the leader, everyone who is following that leader must be following the four regulative principles. There must not be any simple activity. Just like when we take initiation, then we take the vow in front of the guru, we will follow the four regulative principles. Right? Now, it is the guru's potency that we are following. Right? We do not have any potency ourselves. We were breaking, many of us, I know for myself, because I come from a very sinful background, then I was breaking the regulative principles before I became a devotee. And now I'm following regulative principles. That is not my doing. That is coming from the potency of the spiritual master. That is coming from Srila Prabhupada's potency. So if one becomes a leader, then it is his responsibility to ensure all those who are following him are becoming free from sinful activities. In other words, they must be following the regulative principles. And they must be attaining Krishna consciousness. That is your responsibility. Whoever is following you, you make sure they're following the regulative principles. Even if it's just your family members, that's enough. That's enough service. If you can do more, better. If you can deliver other people, that's good as well. But at least your children, your family, they must follow the principles. They must become Krishna conscious. That is your responsibility. Okay. Lord Vishnu continued, "My dear King Prithu, if you continue to protect the citizens according to the instructions of the learned Brahmana authorities, as they are received by the disciplic succession, by hearing from master to disciple, and if you follow the religious principles laid down by them, without attachment to ideas manufactured by mental concoction, then every one of your citizens will be happy and will love you. And very soon you will be able to see such already liberated persons as the four Kumaras, Sanak, Sanatan, Sanandana, and Sanat Kumara." Okay. "My dear King, I am very captivated by your elevated qualities and excellent behavior, and thus I am very favorably inclined towards you. You may therefore ask from me any benediction you like. One who does not possess elevated qualities and behavior cannot possibly achieve my favor simply by performance of sacrifices, severe austerities, or mystic yoga. But I always remain equipoised in the heart of one who is also equipoised in all circumstances." So Prabhupada lists in the purport the 26 qualities of a devotee which are taught by Lord Chaitanya to Sanatana Goswami. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, every Ekadashi, you should read these 26 qualities of the devotee. And you should meditate. Am I developing these qualities? These are the qualities of the devotee which must be developed. Now, of all the qualities, one of them is considered the Swarup Lakshana, and the other 25 are considered the Katashta Lakshana. Which of the qualities is considered the Swarup, or the essential quality? Yeah, which is called? Yeah, Krishnaika Sharana. Krishna Eka Sharana. The devotee, this is the essential quality of every devotee. He is only surrendered to Krishna. This is the essential quality. If one has this quality, all the other qualities will manifest to different degrees, like that. But that is the one essential quality which breeds all the other qualities. So, when a devotee practices devotional service and he is surrendered to Krishna, he is performing bhakti, then he will develop all good qualities. Now you see, devotees have so many good qualities. Why is that? Because they're serving Krishna. And because Krishna is the abode of all good qualities, then those good qualities reflect into the heart of the devotee. And devotee has so many auspicious qualities. The great saint Maitreya continued, "My dear Vidura, in this way Maharaj Prithu, the conqueror of the entire world, accepted the instructions of the personality of Godhead on his head." So Prabhupada says in the purport, what does this mean? You do not change anything. That's the point. Bhagavad Gita? As it is. As soon as you change anything, right, then you are Pashandi. Pashandi means you offended Krishna. Who is more intelligent, you or Krishna? So Krishna says, surrender unto me alone. Sarvadaman Purijaja. Mameka. Mam. Unto me alone. And then some commentator writes, Krishna does not mean surrender unto him. He means surrender unto the unborn within him. So why Krishna does not say, I do not mean me, I mean surrender to the unborn within me, O Arjuna. Why he did not say it? So why are you more intelligent than Krishna? So therefore Prabhupada was very strong on this Mayavadi conception. Bhagavad Gita as it is. Krishna says surrender unto me. Prabhupada says surrender to Krishna. And we are in disciplic succession. We are in parampara. So everything we say is based upon what Prabhupada has taught, which is what Krishna has taught. Nothing deviates. As soon as you deviate, then you are outside of the disciplic succession. You lose your potency. Our potency, if we have any potency to preach, it is only coming through disciplic succession, because we are connected. As soon as we are disconnected, then our potency is gone. As King Indra was standing by, he became ashamed of his own activities and fell down before King Prithu to touch his lotus feet. But Prithu Maharaj immediately embraced him in great ecstasy and gave up all envy against him for his having stolen the horse meant for the sacrifice. So Prabhupada points out that even amongst devotees, sometimes there is some difference. Even amongst devotees, sometimes the devotees become angry with each other. But Prabhupada says, because devotees are Krishna conscious, we can easily reconcile these things. Sometimes devotees have a little disagreement, but we can reconcile those things in no time. Not that the one devotee does not speak to another devotee for years and years and years and years and years. Sometimes it happens. Two devotees not speaking to each other. It's not very high level of devotional service. If you make a little bit of advancement, then you easily reconcile it. What's the big problem? It's not such a big problem. Sometimes we have differences, but that's okay. But devotee can reconcile it quickly. Prithu Maharaj, Indra committed offence, but Prithu Maharaj said it anyway. Now he is sincerely apologetic. No problem. That's the devotional. Last verse for tonight. King Prithu abundantly worshipped the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who was so merciful to him. While worshipping the lotus feet of the Lord, Prithu Maharaj gradually increased his ecstasy in devotional service. So how did Prithu Maharaj feel when he was doing service to the Lord? Ecstatic. So what is the nature of devotional service? Prabhupada said it is not static, it is ecstatic. If you're feeling static, what does that mean? If you're feeling static in devotional service, what does that mean? It means you're not applying the process properly. Because if you apply the process properly, you will feel ecstatic. Shall we pray, Father?